Welcome to another V-Wave podcast. Today we're speaking with John Weisheit of the nonprofit Living Rivers. Welcome to the V-Wave, John.
Thank you, Tom. It's good to be here.
John, I'm looking at a letter dated November 3rd sent to the Bureau of Reclamation about the LTEMP SEIS, and I wondered if you could go through this letter with us. This is part of what kind of process, and if you could kind of go through the major points of this letter, that'd be great.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I guess I should clarify that I've been attending Bureau of Reclamation meetings and writing comment letters about operations at Glen Canyon Dam since 1989.
Okay.
You know, people may not know that I used to live in Flagstaff.
Okay.
In the wintertime and in Moab during the summertime. And I think it was in April, there was a public meeting. It was the very first public meeting that Bureau of Reclamation had to develop an EIS for Glen Canyon Dam. If I recall, they had a meeting place and the fire marshal called it off because there were too many people there. So they, a month or two later, they rented the basketball court at the high school, if I remember right. And there, it was jam-packed. And it took forever to get everyone, you know, everybody got there. I don't know. I don't think we had 3 minutes. I don't think there was enough time for a three-minute comment, but I gave a comment. So did others.
And that 1989 meeting was to comment on the operations of Glen Canyon Dam.
Yeah.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah. The very first time, you know, that an EIS for Glen Canyon Dam was ever called for. So that's how long I've been writing comments. You know, I've asked for an SEIS two times in the last two decades, and I also litigated with others, including the Center for Biological Diversity and Save the Colorado. We actually took it to court to get an SEIS.
Okay.
And we were denied. The judge did not approve, and here comes Bureau of Reclamation filing a notice of intent to do an SEIS. So, what can I say?
Okay.
You know? So the point is...
let's back up for just a quick second. An environmental impact statement, an EIS turn into a supplemental environmental impact statement?
Well, so we're actually on the second EIS. There, you know, there was the SEIS. I mean, I'm sorry. It's these acronyms can drive you crazy.
Right.
The EIS was started in, the first one was started in 1989.
Okay.
There was some delay. Congress intervened. Senator Bradley and Senator McCain passed this thing called the Grand Canyon Protection Act. There were more studies done. You know, I think, in fact, you and I were on some of those studies.
Right.
And we finally got an EIS, and I think it was in 1995, as I recall, and a record of decision. And then in around the year 2000, 2001, the humpback chub population dropped dramatically. And so there was all these revisions being done on the management plans and the strategic plans for humpback chub. And that actually we litigated in 2005. They promised us a new biological opinion, which we got, which was actually worse than the one we had before.
Ooh.
And then the Grand Canyon Trust filed a lawsuit as well. And they decided to, this was during Obama administration, to do a new EIS. It went through two phases. Actually, I'm sorry, there was the LTEMP, that was in the Bush administration. No, that the acronym for that was LPEP, and then it was modified in the Obama administration to the LTEMP, L-T-E-M-P, Long-Term Experimental Management Plan.
Okay.
And then we had, you know, then in 2015, you'll recall that some sunfish went through the turbines and
right.
into the sloughs below Grand Canyon Dam. And, you know, you thought they would have learned their lesson with that, but no. The next thing that started bypassing the generators and living through the ordeal of that transport was smallmouth bass. And so, as you know, smallmouth bass is a hunt-by-sight predator, quite voracious. You know, that's a big issue right there. They just got the humpback chub downlisted, and now here's a threat that is going to put a state of jeopardy in for a humpback chub because of invasion of a hunt-by-sight predator that likes warm water. And that's what we're getting in the Grand Canyon now because the reservoirs are so low, you know. But the point is that our argument was is they're not adapting to climate change. And
okay.
we, you know, because if you read the EISs and the basin study and all the previous work that Reclamation has ever done, is if you're in low water conditions, poor hydrology due to climate change, those reservoirs go empty for the rest of the century.
Okay. And
so how can you honor the Grand Canyon Protection Act if Lake Powell's empty all the time?
Hmm.
You know, how are you even going to match? How are you even going to honor the Colorado River Compact of 1922? Because you have water that has to be delivered to the lower basin in Mexico. So of course we were right, because that's exactly what happened.
Okay, so I'm keeping track of the list of issues here. there are hunt by sight predators that like warm water. The reservoirs are low. The water going through the dam is warm. These hunt by sight predators go through the dam. Glen Canyon Dam sits right on top of Grand Canyon. Grand Canyon is home to the humpback chub, a small remnant population trapped between Glen Canyon Dam and Hoover Dam. Okay, and there's not enough water to go around with regards to the compact.
Right. So, the Grand Canyon Protection Act talks about being responsive to long-term planning.
Okay.
And they're not being responsive to long-term planning. They should have, especially since sunfish got through in 2015.
Okay.
So it's like they didn't know this is a possibility that this could happen. So this is negligence.
Okay.
When we filed our lawsuit, the judge said, nah, we're not going to, there's nothing wrong here. So, you know, what is a public citizen who cares about the Grand Canyon supposed to do?
Right. Okay.
Well, I'm disappointed in the Grand Canyon Adaptive Management Program. I don't have faith in those members or those meetings anymore.
Okay.
So now, the other thing that happened.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
So what has Bureau of Reclamation done in this supplemental environmental impact statement? They're actually calling for public comment in order to initiate this supplemental environmental impact statement. What are they thinking they're going to, you know, which direction do they want to go with this? What are they asking for?
Well, they want to drop the temperature of the river. They want to flush the the eggs that the smallmouth bass lays. In other words, they want to disadvantage them with flows from Glen Canyon Dam.
Well, that sounds good, but my first question is, wait a minute, the water coming into the turbines is based on reservoir level, and if the reservoir level is low, that how, are they going to like chill that water?
Yeah, well, I understand the issue. So I think this helps the campaign to decommission Glen Canyon Dam, you know, because, you know, it's a muddy river, and that's going to disadvantage hunt-by-sight predators like smallmouth bass.
You bet.
It's going to increase the food web because there's going to be connectivity to all the side canyons and tributaries. There's going to, you know, we'll see driftwood and leaf litter.
Right.
That'll help, you know, the carbon base, which is what insects need to survive.
Yep.
So, you know, we need our river back. You know, the humpback chubs in Cataract Canyon are, there's 500 of them. They're not doing great, but they're there.
Mm.
But so are the other endangered fish. You know, all Grand Canyon has is the humpback chub, and they're pretty much confined to the Little Colorado tributary. They're a main stem fish.
Right. But they're clustered around that side tributary.
Right.
Yeah.
So the point is I think nature knows what to do. Dams can't create habitat for humpback chub.
Right.
Nature can't. So let's give the fish more nature. And we can do that by decommissioning Glen Canyon Dam.
Okay. Besides decommissioning, what were some of the other points of this letter?
How disappointed I am in the Bureau of Reclamation. I mean, they're breaking the hearts of the people who love the Grand Canyon. I mean, I took the time to talk about how recalcitrant they are, how for five decades, they, you know, it's just impossible for them to do the right thing.
Hmm. Yep.
You know, so people are getting, you know, here's an example. When the scoping report came out in 1990, there were 71,000 individual comments.
Okay.
You know, there's probably only going to be 71 comments for this SEIS.
Hmm.
The other thing I pointed out in my letter is the letter that came from the Upper Colorado River Commission, which says it's not necessary to do public meetings. That we know what we're doing.
Oh, wow. So meaning we don't need to listen to the citizenry?
No.
Hmm.
Who paid for this infrastructure.
Right.
This, you know, 50 states paid for this. And 7 states are dictate what shall be. And they've been doing this for 50 years, and so far they've made it worse. So why are we continuing with this kind of a governance?
Mm. Okay.
So, you know, I think the people in the tribes is who should be running this.
Yeah, and it seems as though Reclamation is kind of behind the eight ball here. They've been seeing the drought coming for a long, long time. As you mentioned, the fish were making it through the dam. That's been going on for about 10 years, maybe a little less.
Well, I think it's important to note that Glen Canyon Dam isn't built like Hoover Dam. Hoover Dam's intakes are horizontal. No, I'm sorry. They're vertical. Those four towers that stick out of the water.
Okay.
Like straws.
Right. So what does that, what's the difference there? You have these towers, and the intake to the turbines goes out the bottom of the towers. Is that correct?
Yes.
So,
well, it can. It's a very large, tall structure. There's quite a bit of water column there when the reservoir is full, but when it's low,
right?
You know, the whole, you know, it's still there. They They have 17 generators. They changed 5 generators with a different pitch for low reservoir conditions, and they can produce electricity as a result.
Okay.
Now, all the outlet works at Glen Canyon Dam are horizontal. They're fixed.
Okay. They're fixed at a fixed location on the inner face of the dam.
Right.
Okay.
So in other words, and that's that water column, in other words, it's meant to be full. It's meant to be not empty, but that's what climate change is going to do.
Right.
It's going to be empty because there's a higher commitment of water that has to go downstream, thank God, to the lower basin in Mexico. If it weren't for that commitment, there wouldn't be any river in Grand Canyon.
Okay.
So in a way, that's the only good thing I can see about the Colorado River Compact is it guarantees a considerable amount of water to go down to Arizona, California, and Mexico. Why was Glen Canyon Dam built? It was to pay for the infrastructure. That's why Floyd Dominey called it a cash register dam.
Okay.
There was, the farmers don't have a large growing season up here, so they can't, their agricultural output isn't like it is in the lower basin.
Got it.
And farmers couldn't pay for their water contracts to repay the federal government anyway. You know, that's when they went, aha, let's do the hydropower revenue stream, let's make cash register dams, and they went a little overboard. They built so many dams for hydropower that they started losing water through seepage and evaporation. I mean, there's diminishing returns going on here. And that was the main objection of the state of California. They go, wait a minute, you have reservoirs that are just making our hydroelectricity and evaporating, making the water saltier for us down here at the bottom end.
Right.
You know, so we didn't have a strategic plan. All we had was a revenue stream. And Glen Canyon Dam represents that revenue stream. And, you know, think about it this. The total amount of taxpayer dollars going to the Colorado River Basin from the Department of Agriculture, the EPA, and the Bureau of Reclamation is $6 billion. And hydropower is not going to pay that back. It hasn't even finished paying off the construction loans for the Colorado River projects.
Okay.
So that $6 billion that came from 50 states, that will never be reimbursed. So, I mean, we're becoming a financial drain on this government, this country.
The dam is.
Because of our poor planning. We're rewarding these people for poor planning.
Can you run that past me again?
So, you know, this, and you know, it's the Infrastructure Act from Congress that the Biden-Harris administration.
Right.
You know, it's they just doled out tons of money, not just for the 7 basin states, but
okay.
The 7 basin states are getting $6 billion.
Got it.
You know, and it's coming through, it's not just the Bureau of Reclamation. There are other agencies that are giving this money too. There's a fact sheet that was printed and published by the Biden-Harris administration. It's on the Bureau of Reclamation's website. You can do a tally on your own.
Well, hang on a second. $6 billion. You know, how does a dollar bill make a drop of water? This doesn't seem like a situation. You can't spend yourself out of drought. What were they thinking this money would be used for?
Well, to make it more efficient. You know, and here's the problem, is every time we have an efficiency program on the Colorado River, the first things that suffer the most are is migratory birds, because we've been you know, flood irrigation was providing the habitat that was lost when the Colorado River Delta eviscerated. You know, so efficiency is good for humans, but it's bad for animals. The other thing is that you efficiency doesn't mean you're saving water.
That's why I'm staring at the ceiling here going, efficiency? Efficiency with less water. Okay, how long can that go on, and what are the ramifications for being more efficient to the species involved?
Yeah, you know, for example, the water, you know, the turf, Las Vegas Water Authority is buying your turf, and they're saving water as a consequence of that. But is that water going to migrating birds? Is it going to fish? Is it going to fill up an empty aquifer? Is it going to stay in Lake Mead? No. They build 5 more houses. You know, so it's not a water savings program. It's a water transfer program.
And it's funny because when I think of Las Vegas, I mean, they pump water out of the reservoir behind Hoover Dam. They run that through town. Some of it goes back into the reservoir. They pump that out. It goes back through town again. And the town keeps growing. So the amount of water that is cycling through this city, picking up all kinds of toxins, continues to increase.
Yeah, there's that issue too.
That just doesn't seem to be sustainable.
It's not. So, in other words, they're not really solving the problem. If they do, it's 4 or 5 or 10 years. And we're still backed into a corner.
Right.
This train is still headed for a cliff. And every decade from here on out, we're going to lose more water. We're also going to lose a lot of ocean beaches. Because I don't know if you've noticed, sea level rise is starting to accelerate noticeably.
In an amazing way.
Yeah. And actually, it's on time. You know, there were papers written 50 years ago that said, you know, somewhere in the 21st century, this is what, you know, it's going to be like.
Okay.
You know, it's simple math.
One of the things in this letter, I mean, letter makes a point that the agency has been receiving comments about how to deal with this situation for a long time, and the letter refers to comments that were sent in 2002 in January, 2002 in September, 2002 in October, 2003 in August, two letters in August that year, March 04, March 04, April 04, August 04, November 04, November 05, February.
Oh, you mean all the letters that I wrote?
All the letters that you have written that have gone for scoping and 60-day notices and comments for a supplemental EA and a letter of extension for scoping periods, and they're just letter after letter going to the agency. And what has the agency done?
Nothing. And I have writer's fatigue.
I'm
getting tired of this, Tom.
Yeah.
Really tired.
Yeah. So what do you recommend citizens do? I mean, you've litigated, you've written letters, and I'm just thrilled that there are people like you doing this, because, you know, not only do the rest of us learn a whole lot when you do and take the time to explain this, but, you know, what are our other options if we say nothing?
Well, we don't have any. We were supposed to take care of this 50 years ago. You can't take care of this when it's on the edge of collapse.
Right.
And they're not spending money on the right things. They're spending money to make the collapse worse. So, you know, my advice, okay, I'm to the point where I'm just going to have to, like, take care of my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Because my neighborhood's the only people that listen.
Hmm. Yeah, and I wonder how much of those billions of dollars that are going to be spent on efficiency are actually going to look at decommissioning this dam.
Well, yeah, I mean, like Phoenix. When I moved to Phoenix, there were only 500,000 people in Maricopa County. Now there's 5 million.
Hmm.
You know, so that's, you know, in other words, that's how we're expanding the collapse. You know, it's effect. You know, when I started living in rivers 20 years ago, there were only 30 million people in the Colorado River Basin. Now there's 40.
Right.
So we're going to, you know, we're disappointing more and more people every decade. You know, so, you know, I understand people have jobs, they have mortgages, they have children, they have tuitions, they have clothing, they have, I understand all that.
Yep.
But, you know, without water, this all goes away.
Right. Right. And another thing that this letter brings up is not just the difficulties with drought, allowing non-native predaceous fish, non-native fish that love to eat native fish, through the turbine, the low water's doing that. The climate is a pendulum, and that pendulum swings back and forth from feast and famine. And the next time there's a major flood, the dam itself is in jeopardy. And if a dam were to fail, it would knock out infrastructure all the way to the Sea of Cortez, including filling up the Sultan's Sink, where a major agricultural center exists to provide this country with a huge amount of food.
Yeah, I did take the time to bullet some of the things that concern me about dam safety.
Right. All right.
So let me
ask you, you are now, I'm giving you a magic wand, you are now the head of Bureau of Reclamation. How would you deal with this situation? What would you do?
I would ask to talk to Congress, and I would say you need to change the way we look at water. You know, we don't have a national water policy. You know,
okay.
It's up to the states. The states have proven decade after decade that they don't care about sustainability or resiliency.
Okay.
And we now know that we are on the edge of collapse. That word is in the press. It's in government documents.
Yep.
So this is a serious issue, and they have... The states have failed. They don't deserve to run this anymore. It's got something. Somebody else has to be in charge. Because they are. They're, it's a speeding train headed for a cliff with no brakes. That's what it is.
Yeah, I'm just, I mean, so, okay, so if, yeah, one off, yeah, it's like, all right, I don't want to be the engineer on this train because it's speeding with no brakes. I'm just thinking, wait a minute, where would you start to even think about decommissioning the dam?
Well, if you look at the administrative record, they all say the Colorado River Compact is not the right compact for this basin.
Okay, so you have to start by rewriting the compact.
Yeah, but the infrastructure is not made according to our geography and climate.
Okay.
It's an imaginary engineering plan.
All right. So what would be an engineering plan that could possibly work? I mean, how deep would you have to go to retool things, given, you know, Hoover Dam is there with a bunch of dams below it and above it? What would be the way to re-engineer this in a nutshell?
Well, it's not just about surface water, it's about groundwater, because our groundwater reservoirs are actually in worse shape than our surface reservoirs.
Right.
We've exhausted our surrogate supply as well, you know. That's why we're in deep, you know what.
Okay.
Because
okay.
We don't even have an emergency supply anymore.
So it wouldn't be just a matter of retooling the bypass tunnels at Glen Canyon Dam, starting a slow drawdown of the reservoir behind Glen Canyon Dam, and then operating the river, Colorado River, as if the dam didn't exist and bypass the dam. That would sort out a section above the dam and below the dam. But you'd have to basically tell the lower basin states, there is very little water now for any of you, and that's going to destroy a lot of agriculture and a lot of growth in some pretty large cities, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. And this is the reality that we're facing now, and if we continue to put it off, the consequences down the road are just going to be worse.
Correct.
Okay. So what besides Glen Canyon Dam, what other structures would need to be retooled or removed on the river?
Well, you have to realize that every single dam is going to have to come down, because as it fills with sediment, there's no capacity for flood control or water storage, which are the principal reasons why these reservoirs were created in the first place.
Got it.
So, you know, the day is coming when we're going to need to take down reservoirs.
Okay.
And that is already starting to happen. There are more dams being taken out than being put in. Fortunately, there's still a lot of dams on the books, and I'm litigating with others,
mm-hmm.
trying to stop these. You know,
this is nationally you're talking about, not just in the Colorado River Basin.
Yeah, I mean, there's the water problem is a national problem, and
yes.
We don't have a national policy on water.
Right.
However, we have a federal policy to pay for these things because the states could never afford the bill. You know, so there's this marriage between the federal government and the states to develop these water projects. So that's why the Bureau of Reclamation is in charge of these dams. But the legal aspects are controlled by the states. They are the benefactors. And by the way, they've denied the other sovereigns, which are the tribes. They're currently using tribal water.
Exactly. This is where the situation even becomes more fascinating, if you will, looking at the compact, which ignored indigenous rights, looking at runaway growth as a responsibility of the contract, looking at drought, which now says there's no water. There may be tribal recognition, but there's still no water.
Right.
And then looking at the flip side of this, which is an incredibly wet winter with a lot of snow, which then receives a lot of rain on a lot of snow and energizes itself down basin, and really knocks the plumbing system apart.
Right. So, it's the only good thing I see about climate change is it's forcing us to start over.
Okay.
And look at our infrastructure, look at our planning, and change it to make it through the next century. Because at this rate, there's going to be an interruption. In fact, the interruption is already happening in the Middle East. You know, the arid lands of Africa, the Middle East. You know, they're suffering with this right now.
You bet. causing a huge amount of migration. Yeah.
Yeah, and 80% of us live next to the coast.
Okay.
Which is ocean is rising.
You bet.
The lag time between natural disasters is shortening. You know, look what happened to Derna, Libya. It's like the most tragic thing I've ever seen. You know, we learned that dams actually amplify floods when they burst. You know, and the other bad thing is we built these dams and then we started occupying the floodplain.
Right.
Like the Colorado River below Davis Dam is just choked with people.
Right.
With people who are mostly retired. On fixed incomes.
Right.
You know, so in other words, it was Edward Abbey, I think, who said, we don't have a water problem, we have a planning and zoning problem.
Mm, okay.
He's right. That's what we have. So we need to change our planning and zoning. You know, but you know what? It's not just Edward Abbey. Luna Leopold said this. Wallace Stegner said this. Stuart Udall said this. I mean, this, you know, these were great men and great individuals. The ladies have said the same thing, too. Hmm. Rachel Carson, Patty Limerick, you know, when are we going to start listening to people who have educated us to see what is before us?
Right, right. Excellent.
So, you know, that's the thing, is that, you know, nothing's new. I mean, the arguments that I am put in my letter last week were already said 50 years ago. We
right.
just didn't do anything. And now we're behind the eight ball. We've painted ourselves into a corner. We're on a train headed for a cliff. You know, whatever happens, we deserve it.
Yeah, we've definitely boxed ourselves into a corner here, and the way ahead is fraught with challenges.
So that's what I would do. We need to have a national discussion. I mean, right now we're talking about things that don't matter.
Hmm. Okay.
We should be working on two things, and two things only, and that's water and energy. Everything else doesn't matter. But family planning is the number one problem.
It is the gorilla in the room that no one seems to be talking about at all.
Yeah, well, we need to start talking about it.
Because, you know, more growth, more people, more thirst, more need for water, for potable water. And there's just not enough to go around. How do we divvy that up?
Yeah, it's planning and zoning.
Hmm. Okay.
If we can't do it in the family, how can we do it as a nation?
Well, definitely food for thought here.
Well, now you know why I write the letter.
And I thank you for doing it.
Well, thank you. But, you know, it is a lot of fun.
Yeah, we should do another podcast someday on advocacy and the joys therein.
It is. It's lots of fun.
Yeah.
Because you're focused.
Well, it's a huge problem, and it needs all of us to focus on and try to figure out, you know, what is the most appropriate way ahead here, as we face an overwhelming amount of changes that are facing us now. You know, what is the clear road ahead?
I know what it is. I do. I've thought about this. especially on river trips. I wouldn't do this if it weren't for river trips.
All right. Well, I think that answers my question. And with that, we'll go ahead and conclude this V-Wave podcast with John Weisheit. John, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome, Tom. Thank you.